Acts, the 27th chapter, Acts chapter 27. We're almost finished with the book of Acts. You know what's next? What's after Acts?
Romans.
Romans. Dynamite. Acts has been dynamite, though, hasn't it? Have you got something from Acts? It's just dynamite. All of it is. Acts and then what? Romans. Romans, the book of grace, the book of the providence of God. And then 1st and 2nd Corinthians, all we have to get to go through all of those places, through all those books. Shipwrecked is the title of this message today, shipwrecked. Paul was shipwrecked three times before this. So he was an expert at being shipwrecked. How many of you are expert at being shipwrecked? We have all kinds of shipwrecks in our lives, don't we? 20s to Rome, to his death. We know that. That's the end of it. Paul's going to die. Paul's going to be beheaded in Rome. Not going to be crucified, though, is he? He's going to be beheaded. That was an honorable death because it was so-called a quick death. Most of the time they wanted death to be drug out as long as it could in the suffering, absolutely as horrible as it could be, as a deterrent to crime. You know, that is the basis of human government, isn't it? The death penalty. Well, sometimes governments have used it too much. 27. And when it was decided that we, look at that we there. Who's we? Do you remember who we is, Brother Raymond? Who's we there? That's Luke. Luke's writing this, isn't it? We should set sail for Italia. All right. And they proceeded to deliver Paul, hand over Paul, and some of the other prisoners. Look at that word other there. Now, if you've got it's heteros, heteros. Heteros, Brother Ray, you remember what heteros means? Okay, Brother Roger, you remember that word? Heteros.
Outside.
Oh, yes, totally different. Different kind of prisoners. Totally different kind of prisoners. These prisoners were condemned to die. They were going to go to Rome to either be thrown in the Colosseum with animals to eat them alive, or to the gladiators, or they're going to be crucified, probably thrown to the animals in Rome. This was a horrible, terrible spectacle. Now, these people were condemned. Paul was not condemned yet, was he? Matter of fact, Paul should have been set free according to all of the judges that viewed him. He was supposed to be set free. We set sail for Italy and some other prisoners to a centurion, Augustine. Now, it says Sebastian also in the Greek, Sebastian. But what does August mean, August? Well, there's Julius down there also. Yeah, Julius also. Augustan or Sebastian. What does that mean? You remember what that means? What if about it is if it's an August day?
Hot?
Well,
hot?
No.
Beautiful.
What?
Yeah, he said beautiful.
Beautiful.
Great.
Perfect. High. Elite. Okay? Something that is, it's the top. All right, the best. It's August. Such August company. Okay? A cohort, and this is a whole battalion, and then Augustan, centurion of Augustan, a cohort named Julius. Julius. Now, what does Julius mean? In Latin, what does it mean?
The name of a month?
Huh? Latin means, and we get the word July. July. Julius, July. August, we get the name, the month August from. Julius, we get the name, the month July from. October, Octavius. July, okay? Julius. Devoted to Jula, all right? Devoted to one of the gods. Or in Greek, that's what Latin means. In Greek, it means a downy, soft beard. Beard, soft beard, soft downy beard.
And embarking in the Adramyttian ship, which is about to sail the regions along the coast of Asia, we put out to sea. Now, if you've got a little map in the back of your Bibles, you can sometimes it'll tell the journeys of Paul, and you can just trace him as he goes there. Accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica. Who's this Aristarchus? Remember what Aristarchus means? Best ruler. Best ruler. And, of course, who else is with him? There are two people that are going to go with Paul, and they're going to risk their lives. These are his disciples. And they're going to risk their lives to be with Paul. Now, they were not arrested. They're what we call voluntarily in jail. Voluntary prisoners. There was Luke, which was his physician. And then Aristarchus was like his handmaid. Our attendant, our butler. He's going to take care of all of Paul's needs. So he's got a kind of a royal entourage here, doesn't he, for a prisoner. And the next day they put into Sidon, and Julius treated Paul with consideration. Now, if you go back all the way, like in Acts the 24th chapter and verse 23, you'll find that Julius really likes Paul. He likes him. He has a lot of respect for Paul. Julius is going to be a good friend to Paul. And he's going to protect Paul. With consideration, allowed him to go with his friends. Go to his friends. See that? And receive care. Now, every place they went, what was there? Churches. Churches, churches everywhere. Churches, churches everywhere. Every place they went. These churches were building churches. They went out and built churches. What's the purpose of a church? To make disciples and build churches. And then verse number 4. And from there we put out to sea and sailed under the shelter of Cyprus, because the winds were contrary. And we had sailed through the sea along the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, and we landed in Myra in Lycia. And there a centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy, and he put us aboard it. Alexandria. Where's this Alexandria? Where do you think this came from? What do you think's on this ship?
Egypt.
That's Egypt. Alexandria, Egypt. And what usually comes from Egypt, Brother David? What comes from Egypt?
Mummies.
I don't think they were shipping mummies.
Wheat?
Wheat. Wheat and grain. Wheat and barley coming out of there. They had because what's different about... What does Egypt mean, Brother Roger?
Land of red canals and mud banks.
Okay, what's the word?
The Nile?
Mitzrayim. 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 Mitzrayim means the land of red banks and canal, or red mud and canal banks, because it was irrigated. They irrigated from the Nile. They irrigated. It's not dry land farming there. All the rest of Palestine was basically dry land farming, and all through Europe and everything, but Egypt has... They were advanced system. What kind of a system were they? What race were they? They were Hamites. And the Hamitic races were the greatest doctors, the greatest empire builders of all time, and they invented everything that was invented in human history, the Hamites had. And there Centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy, and he put us aboard. Now they're going to sail about 130 miles now. And when they had sailed slowly for a good many days, with difficulty, had arrived at Cnidus, since the wind did not permit us to go further, and we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salmone. And with difficulty sailing past it, we came to a certain place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia. I have written my book up so much I couldn't hardly read it. Now, we realize from about September, October, November, December, January, February, all during this period of time, the first 3 months is difficult to sail here. Very difficult. But you get over there from December on around to February, it's impossible. to sail because there's constant storms in the Mediterranean Sea, and it kills people. Ships are just busted up all over the place. And so they're trying to get to Rome, but they're having great difficulty because they got a little bit of a late start. And when considerable time had passed, and the voyage now was dangerous, since even the fast was already over, when Paul kept on admonishing them. Now, what was this fast we're talking about here? Who knows what this fast is? Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur. They had, now Paul is still dealing with the Jews on the Jewish level, isn't he? He's speaking to them as Jews, Yom Kippur. What does Yom Kippur mean? What does Yom mean? Roger? Yom.
Day.
Day. Kippur.
Atonement.
Atonement. The Day of Atonement. Okay. Now he said, and he said to them, "Men, I perceive that the voyage will certainly be attended with damage and great loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." Now he says here, "I perceive." Look at that word perceive there. It comes from theoro. 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 What?
Would that be here from God?
Theoro. Oh, theoro. Theoro. What word do we have in English from that? Theoro. How many of you gone to the theater lately? Theater. This is Paul uses this term because it's real important right here. Theater, what do you do in a theater? You see. And a picture is worth how many words? 1,000 words. A picture is worth 1,000 words. And Paul said here, "Fellers, I have been on 3 shipwrecks already. I have seen the light. I have seen shipwrecks. And you people sailing this sea all the time, all right, but I've been in 3 shipwrecks. And God had miraculously brought him through 3 shipwrecks. 3 shipwrecks. Acts 27 and verse number 10 is where he said this, "I perceive," that's the word, "I saw as in a cedar the voyage will certainly be attended with damage and great loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." He said, "I see this by experience." Verse number 11. "But the centurion was more persuaded." By who? By the pilot. "And the ship owner." So the ship owner was here with them. The ship owner is with them now, okay? The pilot and the ship owner. Then by was what was being said of Paul. Number 12. "And because the harbor was not suitable for wintering, the majority reached a decision." Now, they voted on this thing, didn't they? Sometimes the majority is wrong. And this time the majority is wrong. "And they put out to sea from there if somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, facing southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there." This place here was not enough provisions in this area, and they did not have a safe harbor here. So they're going to go out and they're going to try to go to another place. And Paul tells them there's going to be a lot of damage, isn't it? And maybe loss of life. "And when a moderate south wind came up," now they think, "Oh boy, here we have, this is going to be smooth sailing. We got a moderate south wind." Brother Mike, you went out in the ocean with me, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, we went out there and caught some fish. He caught the bottom of the ocean one time. Marilyn caught the bottom of the ocean another time. But we caught some fish out there, and the boat was just rocking and rolling, wasn't it? Marilyn was out there one time. We went out in the ocean, and it was, we had the winds, we had a storm coming from 2 different directions. And the water was just tearing it up. And I got her out there into the water like that, and she was sitting there, and tears were just flowing out of her eyes. And I said, "Do you want to go back?" And she said, "No, let's fish." I tell you what, I liked it never. 2 years to get her out of that harbor. But once she got out there and felt those fish catch on that hook, it was all over with. The fear was gone. Well, they thought they had gained their purpose and they were going to have smooth sailing. "And they weighed anchor and began sailing along creek close inshore. Close inshore. Now, verse number 14. But before very long, there rushed down from the land a violent wind called Euroquillo. All right, a violent wind. The word violent wind there, the Greek word is tephonikos. 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 What do you think comes from that, Dr. John? Tephonikos. What?
Typhoon.
Typhoon. Here we have a typhoon. Why didn't this translate it typhoon? I don't know. Here we have, but before long there came a typhoon. From the land a violent wind called Euroquillo. Remember when we were out in the ocean that time, Marilyn, and you told us, let's get another boat? What happened?
We got another boat.
Well, she went in there. She went in this gas station and stole this book. And brought it out there and she said, this is the boat we need right here. We're going to buy this boat right here. Right over there in Morro Bay is where she wanted her. She, well, I thought, I said, you're supposed to pay for that book. Well, I didn't know that. Well, we got a boat. We were out there, and there was a storm coming in from the south and a storm coming in from the north. And we got out there, and the engine locked up, the main engine locked up. Poof. It wouldn't turn over. I had somebody else work on it besides myself. That's what I, you know, that happened. I know how to fix things. But sometimes I don't have time, so I had this outfit, marine outfit, fix it. And it sucked salt water into the intake of that boat. And you know what? When you get salt water in your cylinders, the cylinders don't go anyplace. It stops like a block of ice. And I had bought AMSOIL, 100-to-1 AMSOIL, and I put it in my outboard engine, which was a two-cycle outboard engine in that one. And the AMSOIL didn't work so well. The rings were just destroyed in the thing. It just burnt the engine up. But it was still sitting there, and it would run a little bit. Well, we were out there, and a storm coming, and the water was real glassy. But, boy, from both directions, a typhoon is coming, basically. And we're out there right outside. But we got a little wind behind us because here comes the storm. I got out there and I started that 9.5 horsepower engine. I pulled and I pulled and I pulled on it. My heart was about to kill me. I pulled on trying to get the thing started. You remember. Dakota was asleep down in the cabin. Didn't know what was happening. I got out there and finally got it started. Started on one cylinder. It's two cylinders. And it goes one cylinder, two cylinder, one cylinder, two cylinder. And I'm sitting up there. Remember that movie Jaws where the guy's going like this, that boat trying to help that boat in? Oh, no, Jaws is chasing it. That's the way it was. And when we got in there, she said, we're getting another boat. Anyway, we got in. All the way in. It hit on one cylinder and hit on two cylinder. Hit on one cylinder, and I got it all the way in and just pulled it right into the deal, and we loaded up the boat, and here come the storm. When I think of this, I think of that. Verse number 15. And when the ship had caught in it, it could not face the wind, we gave way to it and let ourselves be driven along. And the running under the shelter of a small island called Clauda. And we were scarcely able to get the ship's boat under control. Now, I'm going to tell you what they're doing here. When you're out there, and how many of you have seen these ships that where they have these sailing ships? And they're bent way over to the side like this, and they're blowing like that, and the masts are all laying almost horizontal to the ground, juxtaposition with the waves. So they threw out a boat. They threw out a boat to help stabilize the ship, because it's like a catamaran, two, okay? So they threw this thing out, and they're trying to lash these together, and they lash the boats together to make them more stable so they won't sink. The wind's blowing so hard, the boat's just taking water. Okay, now they can hardly keep the ship's boat under control. And after they had hoisted it up, they used supporting cables and undergirding the ship, fearing that they might run aground in the shallows. Now what they're going to do is the boards in the ship, the waves are so strong and beating against it. Marilyn, you remember when the pam, bam, bam out there with times. I mean, the boat just sounds like it's falling apart when those waves are hitting it. So they took and they threw ropes overboard, and they used hay hauler hitches, basically like a windlass to pull it together, to hold a ship together, because a ship's made out of boards, okay? And they used the supporting cables undergirding the ship and fearing that they might run aground in the shallows of Sirtis. And they let down the sea anchor. And so they let themselves be driven along with the sea anchor dragging. And the next day they were being violently storm-tossed, and they kept on jettisoning the carbon. In other words, they kept on throwing everything away to lighten the ship. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. This is quite a shipwreck now. Paul had seen this before, three times before. He's no novice to this situation. This is what you call testing your faith, Brother Ray. Paul is just... What do you think about old Jonah? In the bottom of that ship when all this was going on out there. And he just said, well, Lord, here it is. I know you're going to kill me. Just go ahead and kill me. All these other guys dying. That Jonah, you know, everybody he preached to got saved. Wouldn't that be nice if everybody you preached to got saved? He had a 100% record. I never had anything like that. And since neither sun nor stars appeared, they couldn't even see where they were with their sextant. You know, they knew how to do that back then. They can't see where they are. They don't even know where they are. For many days, and no small storm was assailing us, and from then on, all hope of our being saved was gradually disappearing, being abandoned. Verse number 21. And when they had gone a long time without food, then Paul stood up in their midst and said, men, you ought to have followed my advice and not to have set sail for Crete. And incurred this damage and loss. Now, Paul is going to remind them, you know, you thought you had smooth sailing out of here. You thought that you were going to be all right. Now, listen to me this time. Listen to me this time. It's very important. Now, he's going to warn them. Is that what God's people are supposed to, preachers supposed to do, warn people? All right? Give them that message. Give them a message. And yet now I urge you to keep up your courage, for there shall be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. Now the ship's owner that was there, you know, that's the one they called the ship captain, he's going to realize that, hey, boy, I just lost all my money. The whole shooting match, all the cargo and everything. People would pay those ship owners to ship their cargo. Guess what else he's going to have to pay? He's going to have to pay for the cargo. He's going to really incur a lot of loss. For this very night, an angel of God, to whom I belong, the angel of the God whom I belong, whom I served before, stood before me, saying, do not be afraid. Do you think they're going to listen to this message this time? What do you think about this one? Nadine, you think they're going to get it this time? Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. In other words, you're going to Rome. You're going to go to Rome. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who are sailing with you. All you people are going to get to be saved now. Like that ship on Jonah, that Jonah was on, all of them are going to be saved. Not only were all of them saved on that ship that Jonah, but all of them knew Jehovah after that. You know what they did after they threw Jonah in the water? What was the first thing they did? Remember what they did, Brother Ray? They made a sacrifice to Jehovah God, the God of Jonah. They did. They made a sacrifice to Him. They all knew Jehovah at the time He was through with them. And therefore, keep up your courage, men, for I believe God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told. We talk about the second coming of the Lord, don't we? Over here. Some people believe He's going to come here at before the tribulation period, which I do. That's what we call pre-trib rapture. Some of them think they're going to go through halfway through the tribulation and going to be raptured there. And some of them think they're going to go all the way through the tribulation and be raptured. I'm looking forward to that pre-trib rapture myself. But we've been talking about that for 2,000 years, haven't we? The early churches
and preachers of the Lord Jesus Christ only talk about premillennial coming and pre-tribulation rapture. Did you know that? That's what originally was, and then Augustine came along and thrashed the theology of people with his Platonian-type thinking allegories and what we call spiritualizing way of scriptures, because they didn't think they could be literally fulfilled. They didn't think the scriptures could be literally fulfilled. What happened here, the dispersion of Israel in Ezekiel 36, 16 through 19? Because of what Israel did to the Lord of heaven, God dispersed them throughout all the nations. This is what we call the diaspora, isn't it? And then God began to call them back. Wherever they went in the world, they were persecuted, weren't they? One of the only places that they were not persecuted was France. France has always had the kind of freedom of thought type thing there in France. Around 1799, the Jews began to talk about going back to Palestine. And in 1897, they had the first Zionist Congress. Now, almost all of the theology, except for Baptists and the Mennonites. What are Mennonites, Brother Ray? They're Baptists. What are the Amish? Baptists. These are Baptists. Now, these people have been teaching the same thing for 2,000 years. Okay? But all of them, they thought that Israel was gone and disappeared into the world, because they didn't believe what the literal interpretation of the scriptures. Premillennialists and pre-trib rapture people, these people believe in the literal interpretation of the scriptures. That's different. That there will really be a millennial kingdom on the earth. And that Israel will really be the administrator of that kingdom, because the two covenants, what are those two covenants that are literal and unconditional, by the way? What are the two covenants? Abrahamic covenant and the Davidic covenant. You got A+, young lady. Abrahamic and Davidic covenant. Those are the two covenants that are unconditional, and they will be fulfilled. Well, they wrote them an anthem, a national anthem. They said, wherever a Jew is that in his heart that seeks for a land, wherever a Jew is that still looks toward Zion, and it's a whole lot more than that. I'm just giving you a little brief. And they began that first Congress, Zionist Congress. They gave money from all over the world. Jews gave money to go back into the land of Palestine, and they were going to go in there and buy blocks of land, and it was under the Ottoman rule, wasn't it? Faith. You know, this is... I believe that. Those Baptists, those Amish, those Mennonites believe this. So all of the political wrangling through the Dark Ages and Catholicism, you know, they totally replaced Israel with the church. The church is not Israel, and Israel is not the church. Those are two different promises. They do not transfer. But they do that. You know, that's the greatest. There's a large majority of Christendom out there that they believe that. Catholicism always believed that. The people went all over the world gathering money, and then there was volunteers. How many of you ever heard of the kibbutz? All right, kibbutz. People would give their lives to go to Israel, and they'd live in what we call a communist community, which is a kibbutz. Now, a lot of these people came from Russia. A lot of these Russian Jews came from Russia. What was Russia? We're going to have 1917, we're going to have what? We're going to have a Bolshevik revolution, and they're going to go into the communism, aren't they? Now, where do you think they got some of those ideas? Where did Christmas come from? The Jews. Hanukkah. All of this. The Jews affected all of Europe with their ideas and their celebrations. What we have Christmas celebrations today is Hanukkah. Study about Hanukkah and you will see it. They're giving it presents and the singing the songs and all this is all Jewish. And they were very much greatly affected the Germans and so on and so forth. So here we have the origin of communism. Communism, the Jews went back into that land, and we're gonna settle this country by giving our lives for generations, not receiving one penny for the wages that we get. We're going to pour it all back into the land. Every dime they made, they built wineries, they built vineyards, they built orchards, they built farms, they did everything, and not one of them took any wages. They built schools, they built libraries, and they built hospitals. And all of it was common. And that's how Israel became a nation. And then finally, May the 14th, 1948, what did they do? Huh? They were declared a nation, and they were attacked by all the Arab nations around them the next day. But then they declared themselves a socialist democracy from the Old Testament scriptures is what they said. So that's how they got there. But for generations, people gave everything. They didn't have anything but a fork, knife, and a spoon. They never claimed anything all of their lives to bring this land back. And I'm not purporting socialism, and I'm not purporting communism. I'm just telling you history, okay? That's what happened. That's how Israel got back in the land. And it happened. It's a historical fact. That's how they did it. The highest tax factor in the world is right there in that land because they're in a constant state of war. And all of the obstacles in the world are against them, aren't they? Every nation around them wants to kill them. So they are constantly in a state of war. Brother Rex.
I just started to say the communism of the Jews were a lot different from Russia.
Russian communism is a religion. Russian communism, Chinese communism is a religion. They will not allow any, they forbid all religion because it is a religion. When Israel went into the land, their communism was all around what religion was it? Bring Israel back. Who do you think it put it in their hearts to do that? It's what we have fulfilled prophecy. Of all the things that they didn't think it could ever happen, theological books started being written again. It started going back to those old Mennonite and Amish ideas. All right? Now let's go on a little bit further. Faith. Faith. Paul had faith. And still, you know what? Those Jews still aren't following God, are they? No. They got a real... Some come up and God got them back in the land, didn't he? By putting in their hearts. He said, I'll whistle for them. And I'll throw a hook out there and drag him back. And he did, didn't he? He said, but we must run aground on a certain island. And when the 14th night had come, as we were being driven about in the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors kept on surmising that they were approaching some kind of land. They thought. Now, still could they see? No. They didn't have any readings from the sky at all. And they took soundings. And they found out 20 fathoms. How many of you know who Mark Twain is? Samuel Clemens? Mark Twain. What is that? Mark Twain.
Something to do with the depth of the water.
That's the depth of the water. 2 fathoms. Okay. That's good. Good going. Good going. Mark Twain, he said, if it's Mark Twain, the boat will float. And they were going up down the Mississippi with their sandbars all over the place. And by the way, old Samuel Clemens was a genuine pilot. You had to memorize all those sandbars. And by the way, they changed all the time because the river currents changed. And they were sandbars. You had to remember where that one was growing and take soundings all the time. So they're doing this just like it said Mark Twain. And they took soundings and found it 20 fathoms. And they went a little further and took another sounding and found it to be 15 fathoms. It's getting shallower and shallower. But if you've ever been out in the ocean, what's the ocean floor look like? Mountain ranges and valleys all over. Mountain ranges and valleys all over. My wife, when we went out in that first boat, we sat out there in the harbor, and she says, let's go fishing. I said, the fish are out there. This is the ocean, she said. There are fish here. Tie up to that buoy right there, and let's fish right here. And I said, you can fish forever. We catch these little minnows and a few other things, you know, but nothing. Finally, one day, I got out there, and I just headed it to the clear beyond, and she said, are we going to Hawaii? Like this, you know. We got out there, and we caught fish, didn't we?
Yeah.
I said, you have to go where they live. There aren't any fish living here. This is not a fish city. We got to go out there and find the fish city, and I know where those fish cities are. And so I went out there. The last guy took us out there that bought my boat, and he said, show me where the fish are. Did I show him, Merrill? We caught them, too, didn't we? We went out there, and we caught a lot of fish. About filled the boat up. Got to go find those fish cities out there. There's valleys and cities and things in the bottom of the ocean. And so that's what you got to constantly, when you're in this area like that, you got to worry about these little mountains and villages and valleys down in there. And fearing that we might run aground somewhere on the rocks, they cast out four anchors from the stern and wished for daybreak. Boy, I tell you what, I've spent a lot of days out on those oil fields wishing for daylight. Oh, man, it was so miserable cold. Out there in Lost Hills one time, and I was I was the cathead man. I threw chain. And it was so cold out there, and drilling mud is hot because you're drilling down in there and you're pumping this mud. And we get out there, and I mean, it was cold, and ice all over the floor, and you're just skating all over because it's the steel floor with a little, what they call, diamond plate down there. But, man, I mean, it's slick because it's frozen everywhere. You get up there, just barely can stand up, and you throw a chain, and you have a tail on the end of that chain about that long made out of soft rope or manila rope, and you braid it. And I'd throw that chain like that and pop it like that, and I mean, sparks are flying because this is dangerous business, you know. And it'd go like that, and when that chain had hit that pipe, it would freeze to the pipe. And it's dangerous to throw a chain without a tail on it. But I had to cut the tail off the chain because it froze to the pipe. I'm looking for daylight. It always gets colder just before daylight. But after daylight, the sun comes up. Boy, it was cold. I bet it was 10 below, 15, 20 below zero out there. Sitting out there with hardly any clothes on, too. Working, going on like that. Wishing for daylight. They were wishing for daylight. Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men, wishing for daybreak, I missed one verse, number 30. And as the sailors were trying to escape from the ship, they let down the ship's boat into the sea on the pretense of intending to lay out the anchors from the bow. And Paul said to the centurion, to the soldiers, unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved. You must have faith in what in my message. Have faith in my message. These people, these Israelites that went back into the land and built that land and gave generations of their lives without any personal gain at all, they had faith. Even though, and what faith was? That they would have that Abrahamic covenant one of these days. That would be their land. That they would have a place to be free. To serve their God as they wanted. He said, unless you listen to the message, you can't be free. There's only one way of salvation, isn't there? By grace. And then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it fall away. Now, Paul has become the captain. We have Captain Paul. Not John Paul Jones. You know, that was my uncle. He was a great captain. This is Captain Paul. Now Paul has taken over all. He is giving orders to the soldiers. He is also the general, or whatever you want to call it. What would he be here? A lieutenant general? What would he be? A sergeant? Roger? What would he be here, Roger?
Just say captain.
Captain. All right, he's a captain. Captain Roger. He's the captain of the ship and the captain of the soldiers. And until day was about to dawn, Paul was encouraging them to take some food, saying, the day is the 14th day that you have been constantly watching and going without eating, having taken nothing. They were fasting, people. These things were fasting. Have you ever been so nervous that you couldn't eat? Have you been so nervous you couldn't eat? Have you ever been so distressed that you could not eat? So distracted that you could not eat? For 14 days, these people couldn't eat. They're fearing for the lives. That's 2 weeks of total laying down, and when they laid down, their heart was just pounding and pounding and pounding and pounding and pounding. No relief. Didn't know whether the next breath they'd breathe would be in eternity or still here.
And they're learning to trust Paul, aren't they? They're learning to trust little by little. And therefore, I encourage you to take some food for this is for your preservation. For not a hair of the head of any of you shall perish. That's, that's some strong words, isn't it? That's quite a statement. Not one of you are going to perish. And having said this, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of all of them, and he began to eat. He kept on eating. And all of them were encouraged, and they themselves took food. And all of us in the ship were 226 persons. And when they had eaten enough, they kept on lightening the ship by throwing out all the wheat into the sea. Now Paul's going to rescue them. And when day came, they could not recognize the land, but they did observe a certain bay with a beach. And they resolved to drive the ship onto it if they could. And casting off all the anchors. Now, when they cast all the anchors, you know what that means? They're putting all their eggs in one basket, people. They trusted Paul. The anchors could save their lives, but they don't have any anchors now. They've thrown all the anchors away. They have given up. They are desperate. Casting all the anchors, they left them in the sea while at the same time they were loosening the ropes of the rudders. They're untying the ship and hoisting the foresail to the wind, and they were heading for the beach. But striking a reef where two seas met, they ran the vessel aground, and the prow struck fast and remained immovable, but the stern began to be broken up by the force of the waves. And the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners. Look at that. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners. Why would they kill the prisoners? These prisoners were condemned to die. If any of these prisoners got away, guess who was going to die in their place? The soldiers. The Romans, that's what it was. So that none of them should swim away and escape. They all had death sentences except for Paul. But we know that Paul's going to have a death sentence too. Now, if I was one of these soldiers, one of these prisoners, sin being eaten alive by a lion, I think I'd just jump in the ocean and call for a shark, Jaws, or something, or drown myself or whatever. But the centurion wanted to bring Paul safely. Who's this guy again? Here we have old Julius again on the job. Safely through, kept them from their intention and commanded that those who would swim should jump overboard first and get to the land. And the rest should follow, some on planks and others on various things from the ship. And thus it happened, they all were brought safely to land. Now let's go and see if we can cover the rest of this chapter. And the next week we go to where? To Romans. And they had been brought safely through. Then we found out that the island was Malta. Now guess what God does here to the hearts of these people. As God called those Jews back to the land, but when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, now look and see what happens to superstition. A viper came out because of the heat and fastened itself to his hand. It bit him. Now a viper, what killed Cleopatra? A viper. She put it to her breast and it bit her and killed her. This is a terminal death. They're going to die. Okay? By the way, what nationality was Cleopatra? She was Greek. She was not Egyptian. She was Greek. She was of Alexander's and all of their backgrounds, from his soldiers. A viper came out and because of the heat and fastened himself to Paul's hand. And when the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they began to say one to another, "Undoubtedly this man is a murderer. Though he has been saved from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live. The gods are going to kill him." However, he shook off the creature, off into the fire, and suffered no harm. Now, if you go back to Mark, the 16th chapter, from verses 9 onward, you're going to find Mark quoting some of this. Now, I want to ask you, when was the what is the earliest gospel written? Mark. It was written before 70 A.D. All right? Now, whoever penned that last few verses in the Gospel of Mark read this story in the book of Acts. And it was in much later, by the way. It wasn't there in the first one. Where is the oldest copy of the Gospel of Mark where it was found? At the Dead Sea Scrolls. In there they found partial copies of the book of Mark. And there's one thing in the book of Mark that this shows the earlier copies. Well, first of all, there is nothing from verse 9 in the 16th chapter onward, but something else. Where it describes the Sea of Tiberias over there, it says Epites Geis, because the whole topography of the land was changed. And that little phrase, Epites Geis, is put in there. That's what we call research, biblical research of the text. Verse number 5, and he shook the creature off into the fire and suffered no harm. But when they were expecting that he was about to swell up and suddenly fall dead, but after they had waited a long time and had seen nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and began to say he's a god. He's either a demon or a god, huh? Now in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the leading men of the island named Publius. Publius, what does that mean, Brother David? Publius. Remember, you were going to go to A-plus the other day. That means popular. He's popular. Who welcomed us and entertained us courteously for 3 days. And it came about that the father of Publius was lying in a bed afflicted with a recurrent fever and dysentery. I tell you what, I know all about this. I had this over there. Don't drink the water. That's all I can say. And Paul went out to see him, and after he had prayed, he laid hands on him and healed him. And after this had happened, the rest of the people on the island had diseases, were coming to him and getting cured. So now he's preaching to them the Lord Jesus Christ. By the way, Paul is preaching to the condemned men too. Do they have any hope? Now they do, because they have the hope in Jesus, the hope in the resurrection. Verse number 10, and they all honored us with many marks, many honors of respect. And when we were setting sail, they supplied us with all that we needed. God supplies all things, doesn't he? Verse number 11. And at the end of 3 months, we set sail in an Alexandrian ship, which was wintered at the island, which had the twin brothers for its figurehead. Who's those twin brothers? Does anybody know? Pollux and Castor. The sons of Zeus, the twin brothers. That's masthead, you know, they had these things carved on them. That's a pretty good sized ship. And if we put into Syracuse, we stayed there for 3 days. And from there we sailed around to Rhegium. And a day later, south wind sprang up. On to the second day, we went to Petuli. And there we found some brethren. Guess who these are? Churches, churches, churches everywhere. Churches, churches. Who were invited to stay with them for 7 days, and thus we came home. How would you like to have that kind of preacher among you, see? Paul visits you, and you got this man that's writing the Bible, this apostle of God. They would really make him welcome, wouldn't they? Because they didn't have the New Testament yet, did they? And here is God's messenger. And the brethren, when they heard about this, they came from as far as the market of Appius and 3 inns to meet us. And when Paul saw them, he thanked God and took courage. And when he entered Rome, Paul was allowed to stay by himself with a soldier who was guarding him. And guess what Paul did to all of the whole Praetorian guard? He led every one of them to the Lord. And it happened after 3 days, he called together those who were the leading men of the Jews. And when they had come together, he began saying to them, now we got Jews in Rome, don't we? Problem Jews. These are problem children. God's problem children. Brethren, though I have done nothing against our people or the customs of our fathers, yet I was delivered prisoner from Jerusalem into the hands of the Romans. And when they examined me, they were willing to release me because there was no ground for putting me to death. But when the Jews objected, I was forced to appeal to Caesar. And not that I had any accusation against my nation. For this reason, therefore, I request to see you and to speak with you, for I am wearing this chain for the sake of the hope of Israel. The hope of the resurrection. for the hope of the Messiah that was to come, the Messianic hope. And they said to him, "We have neither received letters from Judea concerning you, nor have any of the brethren come here and reported or spoken anything bad about you." Now Paul is still a Pharisee by history. He was a Pharisee, wasn't he? He was a Pharisee. He was a zealot. He was one of these Sakari, these zealots. And his family were famous Jews. He was in the school of Gamaliel. "But we started to hear from you what your views are concerning this sect. It is known to us that it is spoken against everywhere." The sect, what's this sect? It's called the Way or the Nazarenes. "And when they have set a day for him to come to them at his lodging, a large numbers, he was explaining to them solemnly, testifying about the kingdom of God, and trying to persuade them concerning Jesus from the law and Moses and from the prophets from morning until evening." The kingdom of God. Did Israel reject the kingdom? They did. They rejected her king. What was Pilate's sentence? "This is the king of the Jews. He is the legitimate king of the Jews. And you are crucifying your king." And some were being persuaded by the things spoken, but others would not believe. They would not believe. Here we have the volitional gift that God has given the man. That's what we call the grace of God, what we call sovereignty. "And when they did not agree with one another, they began leaving. After Paul had spoken one parting word, the Holy Spirit rightly spoke through Isaiah the prophet about your father, saying, 'Go to this people and say, you will keep on hearing, but you will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but you will not perceive. For the heart of this people has become dull, and with their ears they scarcely hear, and they have closed their eyes." They have what? Closed their eyes for themselves, that they should not see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and return. And I should heal them. Let it be known to you, therefore, that this salvation of God has been sent to the Gentiles, and they also will listen. I've gone to the dogs. That's what he said. Now, 29 is not in the original language, so we'll go to verse number 30. "And they stayed 2 full years in his own rented quarters, and was welcoming all who came to him, preaching the kingdom of God, and teaching concerning the Lord Jesus with all openness unhindered." Now we go to Rome. Yes.
Their hearts were so hard that they were being told that they were crucifying their king.
That's right.
They still crucified him.
And when Pilate washed his hands in that bowl that he had and dried his hands, he said, I am innocent of this man's blood. And they said, what? Let his blood be upon us and our children. And it was for nearly 2,000 years. Nearly 2,000 years it has been. And they still won't admit it. They went back to the land. God said, I'm going to throw a hook and I'm going to drag them back. I'm going to put in their hearts to bring them back. And we talked about Zionist movement going back into the land. Terrible circumstances that they lived from the 1800 all the way to 1948. That's 150 years. And then when they were declared a nation, the first thing, all the Arab nations contracted together to kill them and wipe them out. And they whooped the socks off of them. Why? Because of the grace of God, because not because they're good, not because they're serving God today. They're still not serving God. They still haven't accepted that Messiah. But God's going to use them in spite of them. Because of why? Of that Abrahamic promise and that Davidic covenant. That was unconditional. It's like the condition when God saves our souls. Are you worth saving? No. We're not worth saving. But God saves us because He loves us. And we are loved by a loving God. And sometimes we aren't loving back to Him, are we? Give our lives to Him. He wants, you know, we are His bond servants, aren't we? We are not our own. We're not our own. We're His. Thank you for your attention today. Brother Ray, thank you for coming all the way down, you and Carol all the way down from Tehachapi. And go out and do something eternal. And Brother David.